Welcome to Dialed In. I'm Wade Reed.
I'm Aaron Pascucci.
And tonight we are joined by our producer, Chris Lindstrom.
Hello, hello, hello. It's been a minute, boys, and I'm excited to talk about some tasting and some tasting.
Yeah, tell us, what are we tasting?
Yeah, so I am... So, usually I'm buying most of my coffee locally, whether it be from Aporia and AMFM. If you want to get Aporia coffee, go right to
go
AMFM.
To AMFM, yes.
So I'm usually buying, buying Aporia, buying Joe Bean, and sometimes I'll get the guest roaster from Ugly Duck locally, but I have a few places that occasionally I'll grab from outside of town. One of those is a service that Fellow operates called Fellow Drops.
Right.
And that is from, the company that brings you the new coffee maker, the Aiden, the Ode grinder, the scales and, scales and kettles and all sorts of stuff. Consistently good equipment. A lot of people use it. I'm definitely considering buying their coffee machine.
Yeah.
The coffee maker.
Yeah, definitely.
It's surprising how good their products are.
Yeah, I think all of their stuff is very tempting.
Yeah, and I did see they just came out with an espresso machine too.
Yep.
The one?
Yeah.
Fellow One.
It's very interesting. I kind of want to just read about it first and hear somebody tell me about it that knows what they're doing.
They wanted to send us one, if anyone at Fellow is listening and wants to send us a Fellow One to demo,
yeah, seriously. Phil,
happy to.
Phil Fellow, you want to send us one? We're gonna listen.
Mr. Fellow, Mrs. Fellow.
I mean, not for nothing, but we do have a serious group of people in Rochester that could put this thing through its paces.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think that's the thing is, when you're testing things, it's great to have experienced people. It's great to do that. And then there's people like me, I like trying new stuff. I like trying new coffees. I like doing that. And something about that, that drops thing they do, they send a text out and it's offered for that day. And you can buy one, two, or three bags of it. And it's to your house in 3 days directly from the roaster.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That's nice.
And I know it's an interesting system and it's an exclusive coffee to them. So it's a whole thing that doesn't work for everybody, but for the places it does work for, it's a pretty interesting idea. So there was one that came across on the text a week or so ago, and this one was from a roaster in North Carolina called Black and White Roasters. Wade, do you want to talk about Black and White for a second for what you know about them?
Yeah, and I'm trying to find some things on social media that I should have come with. But from what I know, two former barista champions who founded the company. One of the names is escaping me at the moment, but Lem Butler is one of them. Who, if anyone who's had any interaction with Lem Butler, knows that I mean just one of the best ambassadors that specialty coffee has. Lem. He's a champion. He's made a great name for himself, but he is so all about the industry and all about lifting up others and making things more accessible. I think his experience in the coffee industry vis-a-vis race has been really instructive for him, and he's always trying to open those doors for others. So I get behind Black and White 100%. And my understanding is, although it's not on our social media anymore, but my understanding is that Kat Melheim, who was the founder and editor of Coffee People Zine, was their head roaster for a time. But that might have changed. Don't quote me on any of this, because I just don't see it on our social media at the moment. It's the reason it might have changed is because the company was recently acquired by Fairwave, which is a venture capital backed group that's buying up some smaller coffee roasters, coffee shops, and other kind of coffee adjacent companies to aggregate their resources, as opposed to building a huge portfolio for hundreds of millions of dollars. It's kind of a smaller alternative, but it is offering kind of an exit strategy. And it's interesting because I can remember Lem's name better than the other owner at the moment. But Lem actually left the company as soon as it was acquired. So founded with a great vision, brought in some great talent, and now the future of it may be a little up in the air, so good thing we got a hold of this when we did, right?
Absolutely. And what I noticed when this came across my feed was that this is, I think when Aaron came in, I was describing this as an extreme coffee. Not from the, like, we've maximized our caffeine.
Right.
Yeah, we are maximizing our output.
I was assuming it was bungee jumping.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's mostly how the process goes.
It comes with, like, a skateboard deck. Extreme coffee!
The bungee jump is agitating the beans during fermentation.
Exactly.
I mean, it is bouncy, right?
Yeah.
Sounds delicious.
So when this came across my feed, the thing that grabbed me was that this was multiple co-fermentations, and their goal was to make the coffee taste like a painkiller cocktail, which is kind of a tiki drink that has like coconut, lime, passion fruit, and rum. It's a pretty straightforward cocktail. It's very friendly. And when I saw that, I'm like, man, that's a really ambitious idea. This is either going to be really delightful, or this is going to be a crazy abomination that's terrible, or it could be a crazy abomination that's really good.
Yeah, it's like you see it with breweries all the time. They do that sour that has like five things you love in it, and then you taste it, and you're
like absolutely
this
nothing.
Fell apart somewhere in the process, or like occasionally, like it is just an absolute revelation. So
yeah.
The worst part, the Mexican hot chocolate stout that everybody's doing, I've only had one that's been good.
Chocavesa.
It's you taste it, you're like, this is gonna be great. Cocoa in a stout, add a little bit of pepper or cayenne or something, and no, it just falls flat so many times.
Interesting. There's a few, and one of that I mentioned is Chocavesa, which is stones. And then I think there was one for a while that was like a chase beer. I think it was called Abraxas.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't remember where that's from, but I remember, I think Adam
This
Solomon,
is an Adam Solomon beer. That's so funny.
I think Adam
that's exactly
had
who
sampled
I associate
me on
it
the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And just one of those, like, I'd say now, like, classic, like, craft beer hype beers.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
That was specifically for a while one of those, like, oh, this is very much... It was very much of the time, and it was really delightful too. I mean, it was really well made.
Yeah.
So for me, when I saw this, I'm like, I'm going to try this. You know, it's priced accordingly. It was, I think the price per bag was in the like mid 20s plus shipping.
That's all right.
Which, considering all the processing done to it, that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And it's a 12-ounce bag, too. Sometimes you're getting that for 8-ounce bags.
Yeah, exactly, or less.
Yeah. So at a 12-ounce bag, I'm like, okay, I'm pretty good with that. And so it showed up like 3 days later and pulled it out and smelled it right away. I'm like, got it. This is going to be really good.
Awesome.
So we've talked about co-ferments a bit, but I haven't had a lot of them. I don't know if you guys have had a lot of co-ferments.
Yeah, it's not something I seek out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a beat on, you all know Gold Mountain via Joe Bean. So I've got a beat on like a past crop one that they're still really excited about that they have vac sealed and stuff that I'm like, maybe I'll bring it in. I have to kind of convince the money people, you know, and do some educational stuff with it, you know, do something that's going to generate a little more revenue with it. So who knows if I'll have time to, you know, make all of that kind of plan to do that. But, yeah, as far as like going out and buying them just to drink and enjoy them, yeah, I haven't really sought any out. I definitely haven't sought out any to roast, so.
Yeah.
I actually have to think that I was very boring in my coffee drinking for a long time because I drink what Wade produces. And it's all good.
Just boring.
But like Chris brought this up and I was like, I need to like actually go like choose some coffee.
Yeah.
You know, the other day we came back and we were out and I was like, what am I going to do? And I even tried to like, I was like, Joe Bean's got to have some good stuff.
Yeah.
But then I couldn't make it down there because they're not open on the weekends very much.
At all.
What are they?
Yeah.
They don't have any weekend.
8 to 5.
And so like I missed it, you know, Friday. And then I was like, well, Saturday, Sunday, they're closed. And
yeah, it's 8 to 5 weekdays and that's it. So yeah, I have Carry Go most of the time because I'm not a subscribe kind of person. I want to go, or you know, it's nice for her to go and grab and talk to people.
Sure.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, consistency has been great, but I like the experimentation. I like trying some of the weird stuff sometimes.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, I'll taste anything they bring in it, like Ugly Duck, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the great things about interacting with a multi-roaster so much as I do.
Absolutely.
Is getting to try some of those things, you know, but I'm not, again, they're curating all of it. So.
Yeah. And when I got the first smell of this, this was so evocative of the notes that they listed. Now, I'll say for, you know, different times and different, like, I've messed around with it. I've had it on Chemex. I've had it on a few different ways. And I think some of the fruits come out differently depending on how you're making it. But the first time I tasted it, it was so coconut cream and passion fruit. So, like I said, this is coconut, key lime, passion fruit, and dark rum. And right now it's actually playing more rum and more like coconut and lime versus passion fruit. When I first smelled it, it was so smelling like fresh passion fruit.
Sure.
That it was like, I can't believe I don't have a passion fruit in my hand right now.
Yeah, I think that's what sticks out to you aroma-wise, just yeah. From what I smelled when I came in. I'm wondering something, like, are they pulling a dark rum note from actual, like, molasses in the co-ferment, or?
I don't know.
Okay. Because there are a couple ways you could do that, right? You could rest it on oak. You could, again, molasses in the co-ferment. I don't know how effective that would be, because, like, all the microbes in the fermentation process would just eat up the molasses, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That would be my assumption.
And I kind of wonder, because, like, alcohol itself would probably slow the fermentation.
Yeah, I don't think you'd
want to. Or kill it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's either slowing or killing. And I kind of wonder, did they just, like I've tasted, you know, whiskey-rested coffee beans after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I've had that. And that's been good. I remember.
There's a lot you can do on oak. You know,
yeah,
we did a lot of that kind of thing at Joe Bean. Always wanted to do that since then.
Yeah, because I think there was the gin one you guys did a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Was the gin might have been after my time.
Okay.
We did. Was the Zimbabwe that we did on gin barrels?
I don't remember which coffee it was. I remember a gin experiment once.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, these kind of things are fascinating, and what I loved about it when I first tasted it was so explosively what it said. I'm like, great, they accomplished exactly what they wanted to accomplish with this. It's really fruity. And what I mentioned while we were brewing is that, to me, when I tasted it, I was also pretty impressed that I thought the base coffee, and I can't taste all of the base coffee, I thought it was well-roasted, I had good acidity, and made me want to try one of their regular single origin roasts instead of just the extreme stuff. They have a good amount of extreme stuff on the website.
Yeah.
Like, they've got another one on the website right now. They've got a competition blend, and then they have a sangria blend with different co-ferments.
Very cool.
And I think that's with, like, grapes, peach, pineapple, and, like, other things.
Yeah, that's pretty intuitive stuff, I would think. That's cool.
And it makes sense. So, let's taste now and see what you guys are getting, because it has changed a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, depending on when I'm doing it, I might have brewed it differently or something. This isn't quite as light. I think when I do it, mine is a little more dense, and when Carrie does it, she might have a little more water leak.
Okay.
Into the bottom of it. And it's more clear and expressive.
Oh, really?
Because she'll miss the filter sometimes.
Sure.
While she's pouring. And often I really enjoy it more.
Wow. That's yeah. Funny. Well, I mean, a good bypass brew, that's been pretty standard on every, like, automated coffee brewer for how long? So, like, that makes perfect sense to me. Yeah.
And this is at 18 to 1, and it's still, like, right now it's a little bit dense.
Yeah. I mean... You're talking to the wrong guy, because, like, I do, like, 15.5, you know.
Oh, really?
16 is usually pushing it for me.
Enjoying this kind of clarity.
I've heard you say this before, and I'm like, man, I just don't get definition out of clarity. Like, I see what you're saying with clarity, and let me just backtrack a little bit. it's very pleasant, and I get a lot of the flavors, you know, that you're talking about.
Yeah.
In this coffee for sure, and like that aroma of passion fruit was so cool. Right? Passion fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sorry.
Passion fruit's hard to miss.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if it's there, it's there.
So like I'm just not accustomed to, especially a Kalita at this ratio. So I'm like,
interesting.
My Kalita's like, you can chew them.
Like I did that for a long time. Yeah. I was probably under 16.
Yeah.
And I think I found that I enjoy lighter, more articulate style brewing. I don't like over watered. Sure, to me, yeah. I think this hits the balance that I enjoy in coffee is I really want to work through the details, and I like that separation and acidity and those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I care less about the density.
Yeah.
So personally, this is how I've started brewing most of the time. Is like this. So if I'm doing 30 grams in the morning, I'm doing 540 water.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard you say this before, and I'm like, man, that's definitely a different vibe. But I will say, like, with coffees like this, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Like with coffees like this, you see exactly why you want something that spreads out a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I feel like there's definition in a higher TDS. But I wonder genuinely if something would get as clear as like a passion fruit, you know, that passion fruit flavor.
Makes me want to try
that,
it.
At that lower or at that higher TDS. So
makes
like
me want to try it tomorrow morning.
That's so well, I mean, I want to bring my refractometer in here now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, let's just straight up. Like,
really is it in your backpack?
Yeah, I wish.
Is it in your backpack like my wireless microphones?
Exactly. I should start carrying it around, I guess. But
we're just going to show up and there's going to be, you know, a SLR camera, some microphones, and a refractometer everywhere we go now.
And hopefully a fellow one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to be like... Like, I've brought Maldon salt in a tin into a place before. And, like, man, if you have the right audience, it's a great hook. Because, like, people are like, the hell are you doing that for? And if you pulled out a refractometer right now, I would have flipped my shit. I would have loved it.
Well, I mean, like, I used to sit behind the bar at Fifth Frame pipetting, you know, stuff into my refractometer. And that just raised all kinds of eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, you know, very...
What does a refractometer go for these days?
It depends. They're actually
like,
quite
I've never
a bit
looked at
cheaper
it.
Versions now. I mean, when I was purchasing mine and VST was kind of the only game in town, it was like $800.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're not a cheap tool.
No, but they've gotten cheaper. There are cheaper versions. And I don't know if they're as reliable. VST, I still think of as industry standard. Like, can't get better than that George Howell stamp of approval, but like...
Sure.
For me, I mean, for us old heads, but like, I do think you can find some relatively cheaper ones. Like, and it's weird. I don't like, it's all gotten kind of weird ever since George Howell kind of came out with, well, you need two different settings for brewed coffee and espresso. Right. So, like, so now you go on to like Alto Cold Brew, and under their commercial tab, they have the cold brew refractometer and you're like, how different is it really? Like, is that really a thing? I don't actually know.
That kind
of
reminds
like $600, so I'm probably never gonna find out.
That kind of reminds me of the Riedel glass selection for wine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where
yes.
You can get a glass for any varietal of grape, and it's not, I mean, a lot of them. And I'm like, I mean, they're very nice glasses.
Sure,
they're very well made.
No doubt. No doubt.
But
do I really need a Pinot and a Chardonnay glass?
And they certainly have those individual varietal glasses. I'm like, this is supposed to emphasize this. I'm like, really? You're saying like Chardonnay from the Loire Valley, from the Finger Lakes, and from Napa, and from South Africa all are optimized by going in this glass?
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So what are the beer glass? Teku glasses? Tiku glasses?
Yeah,
like same idea. Like, oh man, as soon as I tried it in that, it was totally different. I'm like, maybe your glasses were just dirty. I don't like, what are you, I don't know, like.
Do you wash your regular glasses?
Yeah, like maybe invest in some brushes and it's the same. Who knows?
Did you just need a brand new glass and you feel that way?
Yeah.
You know, we might have an episode coming up though, because there are refractometers on Amazon. They're $17.99 right now. But
dollars?
Temu?
No, 18? I'm just going to say, you know, with 150% markup, they're only going to be, you know, $70 after that.
Made in America. Made in America.
I got to say, so
we're going to revive the refractometer industry with the tariffs.
Yeah. So anyways,
back to coffee.
All that to be said, I think this one, you know, one, I just figured it'd be fun to taste. There's not that much to break down because what does it taste like? It tastes like what the bag says.
Yeah, exactly.
It tastes like coconut, key lime, passion fruit, and dark rum. I get the rum, I get passion fruit, I get lime, I get coconut. I think it's a well-made coffee. I think it's well-roasted. To be honest, I'm going to buy some of their extreme coffees again because...
This made me want to go out and buy like two or three just to see what they're going to taste like.
Yeah. And Carrie really enjoyed it. Everybody I've had smell it is like, whoa, that's really interesting. And I like that it doesn't taste like natural flavors. It tastes like the things that it says it tastes like in big amounts. And you know what? I like it quite a bit. I'm really glad I bought it and makes me want to buy from them again. So shout out to Black and White for doing a really good job with a very interesting coffee.
And warning to Fairwave not to screw this up for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Keep letting them play in this domain because it's, they're doing it right. And that's cool. I mean, I can't imagine how good you have to be to know going into the, receiving the green. It has to have these characteristics and then roast it so that it absolutely brings those out. Like that's super impressive to me.
Yeah. Very talented.
I was looking, did they say what it was co-fermented with?
I was trying to find the text. I'm going to, so while we pivot on to the next thing, I'm going to look a little bit into Fellow and see if I can get all the details on it so we can go through that. Also, just now, I'm on their website right now, Black and White. They have a wide selection of different coffees available. They've got, you know, thermal shot coffees. They've got, you know, just classic single origins. They've got one of their anniversary coffees, Geisha. They've got all sorts of different things. So really interesting place. If you're going to try something from a different place, give them a shot.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
Definitely.
So I'll hand it off to you while I do a little bit of research.
Okay, so... Aaron, do you want to talk? Do you want to talk?
I do want to
SCA
talk.
Or SCA? No, I'm kidding. Do you want to talk tariffs or do you want to talk tasting?
Well, I'm going to not gonna lie. Go SCA kind of swept over me this year. I didn't get a chance to look at anything. I saw Bob was there.
You mean the Expo? Yeah, I didn't keep up with really much from Expo because there were a lot of things that happened pre-Expo that I was trying to dig into and actually just... got to talk to someone about today. So
my thoughts were I need to put it on my calendar for next year and plan on going. I haven't been. And I've been to Apple has their conference every year.
WWDC.
I went to that when it was in San Francisco like two or three times, and that was really cool.
Cool.
And so in my head I'm like, why haven't I gone to something I care more about?
This would actually make
and
more
then
sense.
I did realize it's because I'm a teacher, and my entire calendar has been the same for the last, 40 years of my life.
Yeah, April's probably an interesting time going into, your last quarter of the year, right?
Last quarter of the year, and it's right after spring break. So, technically, I'm not supposed to take off that week at all.
But do they know about SCA Expo? Come on.
I'm sorry, Norman Howard. Although, actually, my new vice principal, Nick Farnelli, do you want to go to SCA with me? Because I think you do.
All right.
but anyway, so you were talking SCA normal.
So tariffs or tasting?
Let's keep going tasting.
Let's go on tasting. Okay, so a couple of really interesting things have happened in the world of tasting. So the Q grader exam has always been administered by the Coffee Quality Institute, which has strong ties to SCA, and has for a while been seen as kind of more or less a subsidiary of SCA. I don't think that's entirely accurate though, because just before Expo, they announced that SCA is taking over the administration of the Q grader assessment.
Hmm.
So they're doing a couple of things with this. They're actually changing it over from the old standard Q grader assessment to the coffee value assessment, which we've talked about previously on this podcast. And so when the first time, so this was So this is the announcement that I saw was the coffee value assessment to be employed in QGrader assessment. I was like, oh, that's so cool. I'm so happy. I'm so glad because, you know, we're getting much better sensory science. We're not relying on the single 100-point scale. We're doing sort of these affective impressions as well as like as much objective calibration as we can. And we're trying to pull these things together and we're trying to have a view on the larger impact of the coffee in the world. I was so excited. And then I saw what people think of this.
Oh.
Let me just read you a headline. The Daily Coffee News headline. Emotions and details emerge as SCA plans takeover of the queue.
Wow.
I get this. I get one of
Is this where we snap and they show up? Star Trek?
I was going to say, John Delancey. The queue. And also, I really wish I had the Joe Hendry song on my soundboard. When you say his name, he appears. Oh, no. Search for Joe Hendry if you don't know this. Okay. If you're a wrestling person, it's amazing.
I am too deep in the coffee world. I've been reading about this and not once thought of the Star Trek reference. But
keep going.
But yeah, so I get one of Fresh Cup's Substack newsletters, and it was all about like this, like how unhappy some people are at this change. And I was like, come on, guys. We can't just hold on to the old ways. There's so much more behind this that I like literally just found out in the last couple days that I'm like, wow, this is another. Well, okay. So
what are the high points?
So what we love the coffee value assessment. We love sensory science. We love that sensory science is making advances, that it's going to continue to grow and have an impact on our industry, that we can look at something that doesn't necessarily fit the 100-point scale perfectly and go, hey, look at that. Like, it's still a good coffee for these reasons. And then the people growing that coffee can receive value from it.
Yeah.
We're all for that. But what I'm hearing and what I'm reading is that SCA is no longer going to allow people who are renewing their queue to show up and take like a single assessment on a single day. They're going to make you go to a 2-day seminar. Okay. And if you want to get if you want to become a new queue grader, you have to go to a 6-day assessment. Now.
Holy cow.
So it's really interesting to me because for about the past 10 years, SCA has been accused of being more of an events organization than a professional organization. You know, like they have their one big expo.
Yep.
They have their competitions and they're doing more to just hold events and generate revenue than they are to actually support the industry. And here we have an example where they've turned something that was like, you know, 2-3 days of assessment into 6 days of training, which becomes very much an event in someone's life.
Sure.
And the kind of kicker of all of this is that CQI is dissolving. So Coffee Quality Institute is going away.
Oh, wow.
And all the in-country partners who were sending coffees to Q graders to be marked as specialty coffee have stopped. They're not sending any coffees out right now. If you can't receive a coffee from a professional body, grade it, send it back, and get paid to do that, why in God's name would you go spend 6 days and $1,000 getting this Q grader qualification? Geez. Why?
No.
Everything's been completely disincentivized.
Hmm.
And SCA just once again kind of shows up, finds a way to generate revenue, and just isn't really here for the people. Like, there's no benefit on the back end. Now, someone I talked to indicated that maybe if you had a close enough relationship with an in-country partner, they might be passing you coffees. There might be some small cadre of people out there still grading coffees, but right now it's not a viable career path at all.
So, and that's kind of like, if you're going to do that kind of effort, if you're going to do that kind of work, if you're going to dedicate that much of your time to like really learning that process, learning all the methods, learning not just the methods, but how to describe these things and the way they want you to describe and it.
Being calibrated, staying calibrated.
Standardizing.
Yeah, at all times. Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I mean,
and it's $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, not for nothing. That's a lot of money for a lot of people in our industry. So what? For window dressing? Someone said to me, well, you could like judge like the US Brewers Cup. And you're like, that's a volunteer position.
Right. Like I got my WSET spirit cert just to get it. And from that, you know, I paid hundreds of dollars for that. I think it was close to $400.
Sure.
And that was for an online course.
Right.
With no in-person.
Right.
And like, it's not cheap. None of these like certs, industry certs are cheap. And to get to that $1,000 level, especially for something when you really would like to get a return from it.
Yeah.
And not just because you're a passionate nerd like I am. Like, you want a professional return from this, and you should.
Yeah. It's
for that kind of thing.
It's become window dressing, which, yeah. and it's hard because like it used to be so like our sommeliers, right? Like,
yeah.
Our Q graders were our sommeliers. And these are the people who like kept the rest of the industry kind of honest about what was good. Like if you ever got in a conversation about quality coffee, you'd almost always end up mentioning or talking a little bit about like the Q. Well, these people, they do it, you know, and like when Janine was on here, you know, she did.
I was gonna say, have
like,
you talked to her about
like,
this yet?
I'd love to talk to Janine about it, but she's super busy with other projects right now. So, and just hearing from her, like how intense that is, it really lends credibility to what the rest of us are saying about how good our coffee is.
Yeah,
right.
And where is that gonna go? How is that gonna pan out? Like, if people can't even get the coffees
to apply
the knowledge and the skill to.
Well, and then what does that do to just the people like buying coffee and drinking coffee if that's all gone now? Like, is it just now out in the ether and it's like, yeah, this has blueberry.
Is it up to the roaster now? Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you get rid of the 100-point scale, or you at least go beyond the 100-point scale, and you can't say, yeah, specialty coffees are coffees that score 85 or above, which is like when I entered the industry, that's how we used to say it. Like, on this 100-point scale, they scored 85 or above, and then that got scaled back to 80, and it was like, or 82 or something like that. And I was like, I totally understand why you do that. There's a lot of really good coffee that scores an 83, and like coffee that I probably still really love. And then you get this coffee value assessment that broadens it out even more and allows for the idea of an impression of a coffee to market as valuable as specialty or however you want to call it. So I'm really torn, because I'm like, okay, are we democratizing or are we just forfeiting credibility and professionalism?
Man, we've never had a conversation like that before.
Ever. Nothing.
This was...
I don't want to talk about it.
Well,
I don't want to do this again.
Wait, we're what are we doing with quality? We're...
Rolling the dice.
But no, I think it's a conversation that, one, I've loved, like we've had this like so many times in our past.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's something that I think we both care about deeply in general about quality. And I've had this conversation with my friends in the industry who are not, you know, food and drink industry in general, not just not coffee, but other sides of the industry as well. And, you know, as a spirits judge as well, you know, it's hard to tolerate mediocrity.
Sure.
And I struggle with that. And at the same time, there's a lot of subjectivity in what you're saying, and that, yes,
the wider range of subjectivity
doesn't always lend itself to a number, but having dedicated professionals that dedicate time and money and are bringing expert opinions to things, especially, you know, not especially right now, but like experts need to be treated like the dedicated professionals that they are in whatever field they are operating in. And the fact that we have dedicated professionals that have honed their senses and provided value for the industry, for us to enjoy things better. I love that we had and maybe will continue to have experts who are doing this thing at a very high level that I can feel good about it. I can feel good that they've done a good job.
Sure.
And I love experts.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love experts.
And at the very least, they're creating somewhat of a baseline with their tasting notes and everything.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
It, you know, the layperson could come in and say, you know, we got passion fruit, we got white wine, we got, you know, grape, whatever it is they're putting in there. And there's at least an expectation of flavor notes in general going to come out of this.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, how many times have you gotten a coffee somewhere at X place and there's nothing? Like, it tastes sort of like coffee.
Sure.
You know, so this at least gives the, like you said, it's the look of quality, and there's a little bit of a stamp on it that you know it's going to be better than that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And sometimes the baseline is as simple as like free of defects. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Like someone tasting for the off flavors, which is another conversation we've had. Something's only a defect until somebody likes it, right? Like, and it just seems like this is the prevailing mentality. And I think, Chris, you know, you didn't want to say especially these times, but like, we really are living in a discourse of like that disrespects expertise, that disrespects technical knowledge, that disrespects the notion that someone has any background that would allow them to properly judge something in a way that someone else might not judge.
Yes.
It. Yeah.
And I'll say, like I said, I'm usually pretty careful. I don't publicize.
This is a coffee podcast. Not yes. I understand, but
generally speaking, but it's the thing one of the things I'm most distressed about in, you know, society in general right now is that we are, you know, the ignoring of expertise is so distressing because I love learning so deeply and truly, and I love being around people that know more than me.
Yes.
About something. It is my absolute favorite thing to do is to be around people that know more about something than I do and have a real conversation and walk away having learned something. And you know what? I don't have the luxury of being directly around everybody in every field that's an expert. And when I find those people, I'm going to say a wild statement for a second. Their dedication and expertise is way more valuable than your opinions. This is a career based on research and testing and knowledge and observation.
Yep.
And their observation is worth more than your anecdote.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Their general thoughts are worth more than your anecdote because they have practiced and they know what they're doing. And that matters.
I agree.
It matters.
I agree.
And you know what? I'll say it for coffee. I'll say it for spirits. I'll say it for beer. I'll say it for food and drink. And I'll say it for society and science in general.
Medicine.
All of those.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
And here's what really gets me. That's what you're right. It's your opinion. And I don't even have words to say how ridiculous it is that like you are putting your opinion on something that isn't fact-based. Like, and that's what it comes back to.
Yeah.
You
and
know,
I think these are challenging, right? This has their taste is always lives in a more subjective world.
Absolutely.
But they do have some facts behind it.
Of course.
Right.
And I'm not saying that they don't, but it lives in a more subjective world where what you like is
well,
in
that's
this
what,
case more important sometimes.
And then the value assessment is meant to bring these two things together, the two ideas together. The idea that there are standards and the idea that there are impressions. And on that, it's really fascinating because I've got a small group of people who may want to compete or judge competitions, barista competitions here in Rochester.
Nice.
Who so we're all kind of refamiliarizing ourselves with competition format. The barista competitions have already incorporated impression scores.
Really?
Yeah. So they have the objective 0 to 6 scores, and then they have these impression scores that are 0 to 3. And I'm like, that's awesome. I love sensory science. I love that we're sort of respecting where the research is at. But that's like, I've seen some serious bias at barista competitions when everything was supposedly objective.
Sure.
I'm really uncomfortable with there being any impression scores on a sensory judge's score sheet, because like I you know, it's by company name. It's by the baristas who have made a name for themselves. Like, these people just score higher because they do. Like, it just, and I've seen it. Like, I've literally witnessed it. So now we're just systematizing that.
Well, I mean, you could go blind.
Why not?
Yeah. Like,
well, but then, like, how would a barista present? You know what I mean? Like, presentation matters. Like, presentation matters in our cafes, and so it should matter in our competitions, I think. But
I mean, but it depends on what the competition is, right?
Sure. And I mean, I'm specifically talking about like the barista championship. So like, I would have to look at like Brewer's Cup or Coffee and Good Spirits or Cheva Iverick, like whatever, to see like if they're the same. I
think that, you know, cause that one is so presentation based.
Yeah.
And
very.
How do you discuss, how do you tell people what they're going to taste? And that feels very, very sommelier like, right? Where you're treating your guests, you're telling them how they're going to experience something. And they should believe you based on your experience.
For sure.
Speaking of experience, I'm going to pivot over and tell you about the sources of all the coffee we talked about earlier.
Yes.
Since I have found it. So, this is four different sourced coffees, all Colombian. So all Colombian coffees. So this is 40% from a producer, Julio Madrid. They called it Coconut Islands. 20% Carlos Plaza's Cinnamon Pink Bourbon. 25% Forest Coffee, Marlin Lotte 553. 7% Lychee Fermented Jairo Arcila. And it's a wild, like, that's a wild group of things.
It's a four-bean blend.
Four-bean blend.
And one of those did say cinnamon right in it, right?
Like, cinnamon pink bourbon.
Like, so, a cinnamon co-ferment?
Yeah.
Is that?
I love it.
Is that what it is?
I love it.
And that's what I'm really impressed with is I'm not sure they've co-fermented with almost any of the things that are listed on there. And
yeah,
maybe there was one or two.
Cinnamon.
And the fact that it still turned out that clear.
That's cool.
Is... And they don't list all of the co-ferments or anything like that. But if they didn't with some of those things, I'm like, I'm wildly impressed with what they accomplished.
Yeah, and you wonder how they did it then. Was it like it came out this way, so we called it this?
That's what my impression of all of this has been.
What a great way to market this really specific.
I mean, talk about our Q tasters and our sommeliers here. Like, that was my impression of all of this is they're going to throw a bunch of stuff in a pot, essentially, right? And then they're going to taste it. And somebody pulled it out and was like, this is good. Okay, let's see what this does. Now, there's obviously way more thought behind it than that.
Yeah, definitely.
But, like, who goes into a coffee preparation thinking, you know, let's try and pull out some coconut cream and let's put some key lime on that. And, oh, yeah, passion fruit. Let's make it taste like passion fruit also.
Sure.
You know, like, how do you put all those things together there purposefully that intentionally? I can't imagine you could.
I genuinely wonder. And I'm just thinking now about, like, a cold brew experiment I was doing today.
Ooh.
And I actually did a blend for Angela. She's doing... some fermentation festival. I don't know exactly what it is, but she wanted to take cold brew.
Cool.
And so we did this blend and I was like, now I'm going to try it. You know, I want to do my own experiment.
Yeah.
I was pulling it at 22 hours, 23 hours, 24 hours, 25 hours. And at 25 hours, I'm not kidding you, this blend tasted like an Arnold Palmer.
What?
And so I pulled the bag. I was like, this is so cool.
Nice.
So yeah, it might work that way, more that way, where you just like you were blending these fun things you had around and you arrived at this, oh, this particular blend tastes like a painkiller. So like, let's market it that way. That's really, that actually makes a lot more sense to me. So just in light of, you know, my own experience.
Here's my question though. So if we're looking at this, it says 7% Ario Ashila. Is that how we decided?
Sure.
And then it says dash lychee.
Yeah.
So are we understanding that Jairo Arcila is a coffee lot?
Yes. So I did a couple searches. It looks like that's the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lychee is the actual lychee fruit that they co-fermented?
Great question.
That seems likely. I don't know why you would list
Yeah.
Although.
So here's why. Yeah. So here's the other thing. So we go up one and it's the 25% forest coffee.
Yes.
And then that says dash. Is it Marlin? My yes. old eyes. Lot 553. What the heck is Marlin Lot 553 in yeah, relation to lychee?
Right. I'm trying to search and like, oh, that doesn't show up anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's the thing. That's, there is an opaqueness.
Yeah.
And, you know, tying back to what we were talking about, if you're not, you know, regularly getting green coffee from all these sources yeah. and roasting it and tasting yeah. it, how do you know what anything tastes like?
Absolutely.
Is having somebody who knows what they're doing taste it and tell you what you might expect. You might not get everything out of that when you roast it, but having somebody telling you that yeah. you're going to get something, then you can believe that. Well, I mean, we just looked at all these things. Those descriptions have words that we understand.
Certainly words we know.
But we don't know the processes.
How
we
it
don't
all goes together, yeah.
We don't know where it was. We don't know the rest of the process. Like, hey, the co-ferment, but what else was going on? How else did you do this? Where did you do you
know, how long was the co-ferment?
Right. We don't know any of those details. And I'm sure we probably could figure it out through the background of what Wade has in catalogs
right,
and
yeah,
other sources.
Somewhere. Yeah,
and my
yeah.
new but, favorite thing, was there an anoxic pillow in there?
But I can't find it online, some of these things, at least quickly. So even for this, like, hey, I won't be able to find out all this information. I just have to enjoy it in the moment. And then if I ever see one of those names again, I'm like, oh, I liked something in that.
Right. And right. And honestly, when I come across something like this, my thoughts are less on the specifics of the coffees that go into this and all of the processes. My thoughts are, this is really good. These guys know exactly what they're doing. You know, it's that expertise in their production, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what they've done is instill faith in me that I should go buy something else because it's going to be worth the cash.
Yeah.
Ooh, I found the Jairo Arcila, and that is, they call it honey plus process, so it's wine yeast and lychee co-fermentation.
Honey wine plus. Yeast as well.
Honey plus, it's a subscription-based process.
pay us $5 a month.
Is there a honey minus?
And we will honey process a coffee for you. That would just...
So
oh
where did you find that? Just out of curiosity.
I'm just searching.
I
words.
Know. Like, what was the site that pulled
I out? Was actually on X Bloom's website.
Okay.
For their, like... their little not pods.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it had some details. And maybe that was the place I was finding it. And like just doing searches. It's so weird where information is nowadays.
Yeah.
And sometimes I like doing my own research. And sometimes let's just believe that they created something for me.
And it's even weirder than you might think because like I was thinking about, okay, so future Q graders, one of the places a lot of them can work is at importers. Mm. Now there's a definite cap on those jobs. But you would be astonished how many times I've called or written to an importer for information about a coffee. They're like, oh, well, I got to track that down. So like even the importers don't know, you know, like they have to go find someone like, who'd we buy this from? And who's in country, who's working on this, and can we put this person in contact with the person asking the question? So like you're like the insight that information lives in weird places is absolutely accurate. And so yeah, it's like if I were to even figure out who brought this those coffees you're talking about in on a container, I might not have been able to use that source to find the information you just found.
Yeah.
Like, and whoever's making those decisions, like what to put on the internet, like it does seem like it's becoming much more liberal with this is the source. This is what we do with it. This is what it's called Honey Plus. We made that up. Like, and it's,
yeah,
and
of course.
It has,
right.
What was it like? Chamomile and lychee. Was that what it was?
They used wine yeast.
Wine yeast. Yeah. Yeah. And lychee, like, you know, that stuff, it's not super. It's not super transparent and easy to find all the time. And I think that's only going to get harder if the queue is not as active anymore. Yeah. So, That's my 2 cents.
Wow.
That sounds perfect.
We came full circle on this, didn't we?
We're trying.
I was going to say, right at 49.
That's we didn't even mention tariffs.
No. Nah. They'll be gone tomorrow. Hey, you know what we're going to do?
I have a timeline of tariffs and how they've impacted my life.
I thought we weren't getting political on this.
You know what? They're going to go away. We're going to make the best deals, and we're going to bring coffee production back to the U.S. again, like it's always been.
Okay, hold on. Hold on, because this is really funny. I wanted to see if you guys had heard about this one.
Mm.
Okay, so first of all, there is now a Congressional Coffee Caucus.
What?
That exists.
That's pretty cool.
That exists in the American Congress.
I want to go now.
It's a representative, a Democratic representative from Hawaii, obviously.
Okay. Sure, that makes sense.
And a Republican representative from South Carolina, because why the hell not? I have no idea what that dude's deal is, but... So they're trying to essentially advocate for the coffee industry in America. And I can't find the quote. I will find it and we will find a way to get it out there.
Yeah.
But there was an actual United States congressman who said, look at all these fields of soybeans. Why can't we plant coffee there?
No.
I mean, you look at them, they basically look the same. This is what he said. I wish I was making this up, but I gotta find it. But if you Google Congressman Soybeans Coffee, all that comes up is this new Congressional Coffee Caucus. Oh. So like I gotta dig a little deeper. But yeah. Why can't we just all the soybean fields?
Perfect.
Get rid of soybeans. One of our major exports to China.
It's gonna be the best coffee. Iowa's gonna be the best producer of coffee in the world. How much elevation?
I'll tell you
zero.
This.
Zero elevation.
That's where I grew up. They like shit coffee there in Iowa. I'm just going to put that out there. We don't want to put coffee in their hands. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, man.
All right. Let's close out. We can go on forever.
We really could.
Wade, where can people buy some Aporia coffee?
Yeah. So check out AMFM down at 45 Euclid Street or go to aporiacoffee.com. I have some super fun things coming this week. They're going to be in, the green will be in this week, releasing really soon, a double ferment Pacamara.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've got my first pink bourbon. I've got a Pacas honey process and a natural guat. So like just some fun, cool stuff that I'm really excited for the summer. I'm just going to cold brew it all. That's why I'm doing cold brew experiments. Also an anaerobic Honduras. Super Ooh. Exciting stuff.
Fun.
So, yeah, check out Aporia. Aporia is going to be having some fun. Actually, don't let me forget to talk to you gentlemen about an event I want to throw end of July.
Ah, very
maybe
exciting.
Middle of August.
I'm already in.
Out at the warehouse and maybe like some live podcasting there.
Yes. Awesome. So ready for it.
Think we could have some fun moderating a panel there. So yeah. Be on the lookout for that too. It's coming.
That'll be great.
I don't know exactly when, but it's coming.
Aaron, you got any place you want people to find you?
If you're bored and you want to see some photography, AaronPascucci.com is getting revamped. It's in working stages, but it's there. So it's going to be hoping to pull some stuff together now.
Nice.
Taking that time and just throwing some things on. So
awesome. Yeah.
Podcasts will start going up there at some point and Fantastic. Things like that.
So you can find it at AaronPascucci.com.biz.co.coffee, wherever you find your websites.
And I'm a full stack developer.
And speaking of websites, you can also go to Lunchador.com to check out all of the shows on the Lunchador Podcast Network. Definitely check out one of our newest shows, Nights and Weekends, from the team from The Sound. They just had an interview with the curator from the Lilac Festival, Dave Drago, who helps pick all the bands for that. And I think coming out, depending on when this comes out, they had an interview with a band coming to Rochester, the Dandy Warhols, that we did a remote interview with and had a really good time, had a good conversation with Peter from the band. So they're doing some really cool stuff over there. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back next time with more
Dialed In.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.